The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Runes, the 2018 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2018. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Good afternoon. You guys are the brave ones. You stayed all the way until the end. And so let's make a deal. I won't mind if you yawn, if you don't mind if I yawn. Is that fair? And I also noticed the other workshop going on right now looked really interesting. I told our headmaster, I said, you don't have to come and hear me. The other one looks super applicable. I thought that you would really enjoy that one, and so feel free to stay. But I was reading through that, and I did notice at the very bottom of his description, the gentleman who's presenting next door, he says, this workshop is not going to be fun. And it got me worried because I thought, what? At only two workshops available. What if you guys picked this one because you thought it was going to be fun? And that's a lot of pressure for me at the end of a long day, right? It reminds me of my students when I call on them to open in prayer for class, and they say, Lord, please make this class fun. And I say, that's not fair to me. Don't ask the Lord for that and put that on my shoulders. I am very thankful you're here. My name is Christy Wright. I am the assistant head of school, or as my headmaster likes to call me, the assistant to the head of school, for those who watch The Office. I'm the assistant head at Highland Rim Academy. We're in Cookeville, Tennessee. And if you draw a triangle between Nashville and Knoxville and Chattanooga, well, I'd say we're in the middle of that. We're between Nashville and Knoxville, right off I-40. I live further south, so I'm used to saying triangulate, and that's where I live. But our school is right off I-40 near Nashville. I've been at the school for 11 years, and I was just speaking to Larry Cornelius here about, he introduced me as the founder of our school. That is absolutely not the case. I was the first employee that our founder hired in the February before our school opened in 2007. So I've seen a lot, but I haven't seen everything, which I think makes me a good fit for talking about this with you guys. What else can I tell you about myself? I have four kids. My husband is here. Thankful that he's here. My kids are in San Antonio with my dad, because the only thing better than driving from Middle Tennessee to Dallas is driving from Middle Tennessee to San Antonio and then turning around and coming back up to Dallas. So we have two kids in school. And then two of them are still at home. So the last few years I've been learning what it means to be a Highland Rim Academy parent as well. And that's been really interesting. I teach a few rhetoric classes still. I have taught everything my first year. I taught first and second grade. And then sort of as needed, started full-time, went into more administration just a few years in. So I've taught every grade at our school except kindergarten, because I'm not that brave. And currently where I've landed is in the rhetoric classes and overseeing senior thesis. And I was thinking about when you introduce yourself, when you give a talk as a rhetoric teacher, that's a lot of pressure, right? If I said, I'm in administration, but I still teach a math class, that you would not be weighing all of my words as carefully as you probably are right now, looking for those grammatical errors and, you know, how's my intonation and my expression and gestures, of course, is always an important part of that. If I were a math teacher or science teacher, you would not be doing that. And so I think from now on, I'm just going to introduce myself strictly as an administrator, because then the only thing that I really have to demonstrate right out of the gate is that I'm really good at walking hallways. It's pretty much all we do, right? My students would have laughed at that joke. Anyway, I want to start off with this quote from Virgil at the top of your note sheet. In the Aeneid, he writes, "Sicutor ad astra." And that translates, thus, one journeys to the stars. And that's what it says, but what it means is, through these difficult things, this is how we attain immortality. And we're not here trying to attain immortality, but I thought that quote was fitting for what I'd like to speak with you guys about today. Thus, one journeys to the stars. I've heard it said that parenting, and I mentioned I have four small kids, so my world has been very, very much immersed in the world of parenting. I've heard it said that parenting is like traveling through very difficult terrain. And a gentleman in our church said, everybody needs to hear two kinds of voices as a parent. He said, the first voice is the voice from the mountaintop. This is the voice of people who have gone way ahead of you, and they made it. They made it to the top of the mountain. And they're up there, and they can say, hey, you can do this. You've got this. By the way, watch out for that ledge over there. And there's some fresh water, you know, way far east if you go that way. And they really can see that 10 to 20,000 foot view. Super helpful. They tell you things like, and again, as parents, you know, don't worry about that potty training thing. Nobody goes to kindergarten in a diaper. Or they say, oh, it's just spilled milk. Or this one's bittersweet. I once heard a woman tell me that when her kids were little, that those were the best days of her life. That's perspective, right? But then we also need somebody who's just not 10 or 20,000 feet ahead, but 10 or 20 steps ahead of us. And they're the ones just cutting through that brush right in front of you. Right, they maybe can't see the big picture, but they can say things like, there's a rock there, don't trip, or watch out for those thorns. And they have a little more connection with what you're dealing with day to day. And so this is that friend you're discussing, you know, when do we transition the baby to eating solid foods? Or maybe needing somebody to understand that, yes, I know it's spilt milk, but when you have one child who spills milk at the table every single day, that it's extremely frustrating, and you need someone who can really, yeah, you're nodding, you get it. And sometimes this little boy with blue eyes and dimples, who is adorable, spills multiple times at the dinner table, and that's where my husband's like, you know what, Mom, I'll handle this. And you need somebody who's just ahead of you to help you walk through those things that are a little more day-to-day. And growing a school is in so many ways no different than growing a family, right, for those who've raised children. For those who've raised up schools. And like parents nurturing and raising a fragile little thing to maturity and independence, private school educators, and specifically classical and Christian educators, need both of these kinds of voices in our lives because the terrain is rough indeed. So why does 11 years matter? Our school just finished its 11th year going into our 12th, and I thought this topic was really apt because we have experience at Highland Rim, but we are still learning so much. And in a lot of ways, we're in the clear, and in a lot of ways, we have a lot of work ahead of us. And so those first 10 years are really, really fresh for me and for our faculty and staff. And so I hope that I can share something that's pretty fresh in my experience and not, you know, we're not 30 years in and I haven't glossed over those first few years, but I also have learned a thing or two. So let's jump in. I have 10 lessons for you. Probably could have handled three in the time, but I'll try to move through them. The first one is by far the longest, so don't worry if we're still on that first point in about 15 minutes. So lesson one, aiming for the stars while finding contentment in the dirt or the mud or whatever else God has providentially put into your life. And I want to break this down into three more points. And the first point is that we must foster 2020 vision. My dad served in the Air Force, retired as a colonel about 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And he used to talk about eagle-eye vision. And if you had eagle-eye vision, they would want you to be a pilot because you could see better than 20/20. And as I was thinking about this talk, I thought, you know, I wonder if that was like a dad thing, if he just told me that, or if eagle-eye vision is actually legitimate. And so I was Googling a bit, and I wanted to share what I found on the internet with you about eagle-eye vision. Eagle vision, also known as Odin's sight by Viking assassins, is an extrasensory sixth sense that lays dormant within human beings as a result of interbreeding between ancient human beings and members of the first civilization when the precursors were physically alive. I just want to be really clear, and I think that Assassin's Creed, I'm not exactly sure what that is, but that comes from something along those lines. That's not what I'm talking about at all. Eagle-eye vision, as I continue to find out, has to do with eagles being able to see better than 20/20. In fact, they can see like 24 or 25, which is really incredible. And as we were traveling down from Tennessee, I was reading lots of facts about various foul retina to my husband, which I'm sure he enjoyed. 20/20 vision is what I'll talk about, but I know there are some overachievers in here, and so you guys can be those eagle-eye vision people, all right? So we're looking, my first point is to foster 20/20 vision. And then 2010, which is human eagle-eye vision for those overachievers. So when we talk about 20/20 vision, I'm talking about two things specifically. The first is to be able to see something that is not really there, something that is, in fact, invisible, And this is what we need to be able to see something invisible. We need to know precisely what we're after. What is it we're striving for? You must have a firm grasp lest you miss it when you see it, right? The other thing we need is an incarnational understanding of classical Christian education. Visit as many schools as you possibly can. Visit as many schools as you possibly can. This vision, this incarnational understanding, this vision is gained not by doing less than reading a copious amount of books on the topic, but more. So read all the books, okay? But then also go and see what this looks like in different schools. You see it in your school, but go see it in as many different schools as you can. Even the Word was made flesh, right? And so go see this in action. And also, if I'm allowed to say this, go see ACCS schools if you can, but also see schools that are classical but not necessarily in your vein, because it will create parameters. And we have a lot of schools pretty near us, and there are some schools you say we want to be exactly like that in these areas, and then we have some schools we say we definitely want to learn from them in these areas, but I'm really glad I saw their classroom management because we really don't want to be like that. And it's actually, it could be an encouragement to us that we're on the right track, and it helps create parameters. What kind of classical school do you want to be? So go find those ACCS schools near you, and then also don't be afraid to go see other schools that aren't necessarily ACCS. The other thing we need is others who can see this invisible thing along with us, lest we find out that maybe we were just suffering from delusions of grandeur or hallucinations. When my husband Jeff and I we'd married for 7 years before we had children, and we had this vision of nightly reading to our kids long passages from Scripture or Lord of the Rings or A Pilgrim's Progress, of course, followed by a lengthy discourse on the major themes and maybe how the Holy Spirit had used that text to prick our hearts. Not right away, when the kids were older, like 2, 3, 4 years old. So you can, I'm not kidding. So you can imagine my dismay to discover that the 30 minutes before bedtime is really more often than not akin to what I imagine it must be like to teach a flock of chickens how to sing the Hallelujah chorus in careful 4-part harmony. And I don't mean just any chickens. I mean ones that have been on speed. That's what it's like at our house. I don't know about yours. And I'm also convinced that the first time wine was ever served at dinner, it was done by parents of young children, that the wine had nothing to do with the meal itself. It was for what would come at bedtime immediately afterwards. Yeah, you know. You know. So sometimes, and really quite often, our vision for the life that we want, it needs grounding, right? It needs grounding. And a plurality of fellow seers will really only bring wisdom. We also need to see something. In order to see something that is not there, we also need a vivid imagination. I love this point. I wish I could do a whole talk on this point. We need a vivid imagination to rescue us from a world that is rank with naturalism and empiricism. Guys, read fantastic nonfiction. I know as leaders in the school, you're reading leadership books and you're reading all the great books, trying to catch up and, you know, stay a few steps ahead of your students. Read really, really great nonfiction works. Develop your imagination. Find like-minded imaginers and let them help you entertain really absurd ideas, ideally over a really great meal. Ideas like, if the pearly gate is a single pearl, then we really need to talk about this oyster, right? Just have fun with that. Enjoy exploring things with your imagination. Well, if the New Jerusalem is a cube, then are we all going to fly? Is that a possibility? Just enjoy being imaginative. And here's a really wild idea. What would it be like to be part of a fully formed and fully functional classical Christian school whose budget is met, whose students re-enroll without question, whose teachers can perfectly implement the Socratic method, right? These are issues of imagination, aren't they? And I just want to put a plug in here. Speaking of developing imagination, Notes from the Tilt-A-Whirl by N.D. Wilson, which I'm sure you'll find on a table tomorrow. I'm not sure if the books are set out yet. But he writes that book, and it's right there at the intersection between imagination and reality, and his work sits right there. It's such a good book. And of course, C.S. Lewis is such a good resource for developing imagination. My imagination is still recovering from having read Pere Lander last summer. So so fascinating for me. It's given my imagination so much to work with. We must develop 20/20 vision to see something that is not there. We must be imaginative. On Sunday this past week, I had our church nursery. I had about 5 kids, ages 2 to 5, some toddlers out there, little boys, little girls. And it was a nice day. I took them outside, and they're swinging and playing and doing all the things that children do. And suddenly in the trees next to me, I heard something. And I was a little alarmed, and I saw the leaves were rustling. And I looked over, and I said, boys, there are 3 boys, 2 girls. I said, boys, I want you to listen to me very carefully right now. And they looked up at me. And I said, I'm here with the girls. I'm pushing them. I said, something's in the trees. And they stopped, and they stared wide-eyed. I said, boys, there are dragons in the trees, and we need help. And we need sticks, and we need poles, and we need you to go take care of those dragons right now. And I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to protect the girls, but we need you to go out there and fight. Well, what do 3-year-olds do? They jumped right in, right? We had a super fun time. They captured baby dragons, because if you capture the babies, then, you know, they won't be as vicious when they're older. And we even put up a flag because we were stranded on an island, and we had a really great time imagining. But the truth is that imagination is not just for children, right? It's actually for adults, but we just train them as children so they'll be marvelously skilled at it when they really need it. When they're sitting here trying to figure out what it means to run a classical Christian school. So be imaginative. Developing 20/20 vision means seeing something that is not yet there, but it also means seeing something that is there right in front of you. We may see where we're going. We might have that vision. We might see that really clearly. But if we don't know where we are, then we're sure to have no hope of getting where we hope to be, at least not alive or with any sanity or with any friends. We have to clearly see what our strengths and weaknesses are. We have to see our market really clearly, and that will be different for each of us, right? Martin Cothran from Memoria Press in Highlands Latin School came and spoke to, I think it was a banquet at our school, probably year 2, year 3. And he's talking about these great things that's going on there at Highlands Latin. And one of our dads came up to me afterwards. He was like, we're doing it wrong. Why aren't we growing like them? Why aren't we having the success that they're having? And I had to remind him that Highlands Latin is in Louisville, which, by the way, is home to Kentucky Country Day School. That is this year charging $21,900 for tuition in Louisville, with lots of private schools. And in Cookeville, Tennessee, as of right now that I'm aware of, there's one other private school, a K-8. It's Christian. And that's it. We have about 33,000 people there. And it's a college town. And our market's not going to do the same kind of thing, but it doesn't mean that we can't be a successful school, but we need to know what is our market and what's possible here with the resources that God has given to us. We must see clearly. We also, as boards and administrators, we must see clearly what the needs of the school are. Again, visit as many classical schools as possible, and don't stop that. We did that a lot. Our first few years, we would take teachers on trips and just let them observe and sit and learn. They've told us, and then we stopped. After a few years, we said, oh, we're getting older. We don't really need that anymore. I think we know what we're doing. And our teachers came to me after a while, and they said, can we please go back and observe schools? That was the best training. And so now we do that on a cycle, and we get people into schools as much as possible. And we just help them, you know, guide them through, what are you seeing? What are you noticing? What can you take back? Let's do a little bit of compare and contrast. How are you encouraged? Once we work toward developing 20/20 vision, what do? What then? Heard a really good talk, I hope you did too, from Keith Nix this morning about strategic planning. And that's my next point, is to develop a strategic plan with teeth and tenacity. And I think these are recorded, so please go back and listen if you did not hear that this morning. Keith Nix this morning talked about strategic planning. Highland Rim started doing this in about our 5th year, and I think that's really when we started picking up steam, was because we started working on developing a strategic plan. We met, was it last week? Just updating that and having a board retreat or a whole day where we sit and walk through our strategic plan. So know where you are, know where you are going, see both with utmost clarity, and then have an excellent plan for closing that gap. So we aim for the stars while finding contentment in the dirt by seeking to have 2020 vision. And I have two more very brief points on that one. If you have heard George Grant, by the way, who's ever heard George Grant speak? And you most definitely have heard him talk about Eugene Peterson's idea of a long obedience in the same direction, right? It's pretty much the thing he talks about. He just repackages it in these amazing, beautiful ways every time. And I'm so thankful because it's the same consistent message. And my heart as a Christian needs to hear that. And then my heart and my mind as an educator needs to hear that as well. Try to see your efforts in the classical Christian world as a necessary component of your own journey homeward to heaven, and you'll pretty quickly be reminded of the fact that slow growth and slow progress, filled with many monotonous and common days, is simply the life that most of us are called to live, right? A few exceptions here and there. Your efforts in your classroom or at your school are no different than your efforts as a Christian. So just grow comfortable and get cozy and settle in with that idea. I think my favorite line from the whole Lord of the Rings trilogy is found in Return of the King, and it's this line, Sam plodded on. Sam plodded on. That's just what he does, right? That's why he's the hero, and it's why the mission is accomplished and home is rescued and restored, because Sam plodded on. And then my third point quickly under aiming for the stars. So simple, but have confidence in God's sovereignty. He could hurry things along if he wanted to, right? He has the power to do that. He could provide just the right staff, the money and the facilities and the enrollment. And if he hasn't, then he's chosen not to do so. Instead, he's probably called you to a life of long obedience in the same direction, to lots of plodding. It's the most basic truths that I think we need to have repeated most often, and I just wanted to put that before you. Have confidence in God's sovereignty. I know that that's encouragement I have needed. It's so basic, but so powerful. All right, the second lesson, the value of developing and utilizing founding documents. I'm going to file this one under things that Highland Rim did well. And I think we did it well because we borrowed from other people and we didn't reinvent the wheel. So which documents am I talking about specifically? I'm going to walk through systematically the way we talk to our new families or new faculty and help explain how this document leads to this document, leads to this document, and how they're really all one system that support one another. So of course we're going to start with our statement of faith, because the most important knowledge we can have, the most important document we can have, is what we believe about who God is and who we are and about the world and about his word. And then we also have something called a secondary doctrine policy that we love. It is such a helpful tool for us. It's actually, we include it every time we give our statement of faith, we include it right there. And it outlines, what does this statement of faith do? It's not enough just to have it. You need to have a really good understanding of what do those statements mean for your school. And so our secondary doctrine policy, which I'm so happy to share if you're interested in that, it just says, hey, we believe these things are primary. Everything not outlined is secondary, and we're gonna be dogmatic about these things in our classrooms, and there's freedom here for teachers to teach that way dogmatically in our classrooms. Everything outside of that, we're sending home to parents and to pastors to follow up. We think they're important, right? Secondary doctrines are very important, but those aren't going to be the kinds of things that we're going to be dogmatic about. We'll definitely discuss them. We'll debate them. We'll get into the nitty-gritty of what Scripture says about this kind of baptism or that. But we're only going to be dogmatic about the kinds of things that are statement of faith. So that's a great model. It's certainly not the only one, but that secondary doctrine policy is really part of our statement of faith. So again, starting with who is God, who is man, what are we doing here? Let us understand the world. Leads us to, in our field, our educational philosophy, right? If these things about God and man are true, then these other things necessarily must be true about the way we educate children. So we have our educational philosophy. Well, if these things are true about how we educate children, then what does that mean for Highland Rim Academy or your school? And that's where our vision comes in, or maybe you have a mission, or maybe you have both. But we have a school-specific vision statement, a school-specific vision statement. That statement then leads to an ideal graduate profile. Heard someone else mention that. Have on paper, what is that ideal graduate? Again, ideal graduate. And ours just happens to be split into academic, spiritual, and civic characteristics. But we go to that all the time. And then something that I would recommend that we did not have, we had all those other documents in place pretty early, but something we did not have, and I think you would agree with me, Mr. Duncan, that's been probably the source of greatest conflict and strife just over the last 11 years is an enrollment policy. Just lots of ways to enroll, but know what that way is and why, and communicate that frequently. So develop incredible documents and then let them guide your school. It is not enough to have them. Put them in all the handbooks you want. Okay, they won't do anything. Train everyone rigorously on what these documents are and then revisit them. Again, we're forgetful people. We need to be reminded all the time. Flesh out for all of your constituents what these documents are, how we use them, because like the humans who made those documents, they are naturally lazy and they have to be put to work. So put those documents to work. When I do academic advising, I always bring out our vision. I don't bring out all of those documents, but I always bring out our vision. In fact, I think if you asked our parents, every time they hear from an administrator, they're going to hear the vision. It's going to be the first thing. And I would love if they would roll their eyes and say, oh, here's a vision again, because that means that we're putting it before them all the time. When I speak with our students and our parents at Academic Advising, I pull out that ideal graduate. This is like middle school up through high school. I pull that profile out, and I say, hey, guys, I know you saw it just last year, but let's just take a second and look at that for a minute. Do you see your child maturing toward these ends? And usually I see parents looking through that and smiling and nodding. And so it's just that constant reminder of what is it we're doing here. And I'm vision casting for what that, you know, maybe if we're talking about an eighth grader, right? The eighth grader is not there yet. But the parents should be able to look and say, you know, yeah, we're making a little progress. And I'm really excited about what's to come in the next 4 years. So put those documents to work. Develop the habit of asking whether decision X or Y serves the vision of the school. Okay, that vision is only as helpful as your ability to put it to use. And then proceed accordingly. Is it yes? Is it no? Are you going to hold that with an open hand or a closed hand? Right? Our dual enrollment program, we've said yes to. It serves our vision. We hold it with a pretty open hand. At any point that's not serving our vision, we're going to let it go. But right now, we think that it's doing a pretty good job. Catechism and creeds, we're going to hold that with a tight hand, right? We have to fight for us to let that one go. A football program with our 20 total high school kids, probably not going to look at that one for a while, at least. But use your vision. Take everything back to that vision. And so at the board level, at the administration level, at the teacher level, train everyone to think in this way. How does this serve the vision of the school? And then here's a challenge, if you're feeling up to it. Train your parents to ask questions like that as well, so that when they come and they really want to know why are we having to do X, Y, Z, that train your parents to always ask, how does this fit into the vision of our school? And that's some good accountability, right? And if we don't have a really great answer, then we should probably be glad that they're asking and revisit some things, right? Third lesson, know your drivers and aim them well. So ask these questions, your drivers, the people who are driving your school. Who is driving your school? And do not make assumptions. Who is really driving your school? Are they aimed in the same direction? All those people who are driving the vision, are they aimed in the same direction? Do not make assumptions here. Next question is, how do you know that they're aimed in the same direction? Well, I know that guy. I've known him for 10 years, 20 years. He's a great guy. How do you know that you guys are aimed in the same direction? And then what are you actively doing about it? So again, who is driving your school? Are they aimed in the same direction? How do you know? And then what are you actively doing about it? Fourth lesson. And this isn't, I don't know that this is a lesson so much as something for us to, I just want to encourage you in some of these struggles, establishing the first classical Christian school in a community. Raise your hand if you are the only classical Christian school in your town. Yeah, so I thought, super common. So again, we have about 30 some odd people in our area. There's one other Christian school, a K-8. We had another one pop up and then close down, I think, within the past 3 to 5 years. I'm trying to think. There's another one about 45 minutes from us. Nashville's an hour, hour and a half, several good schools over there, but we're definitely the only private high school in our town, but we're the only classical school in our town. And so I just want to walk through a few problems with that. And again, I'm sharing these just for encouragement, just so that you know that you're not alone there. Selling people something that they don't usually know they need is a problem, or know that they want. Absolutely. And what people want and what they think they want isn't always the same thing, right? So sometimes they wanted classical Christian education, but they just didn't know that. They didn't read the books. They don't know the vocabulary. They don't have those categories. But once they've been at your school for a while, they'll say, this is what we were looking for. I just didn't know that. What a blessing to serve their family that way. Sometimes that they didn't want classical Christian education, not this brand of it anyway. They really wanted something else, and it's okay to part ways after a while. If they say, we thought this is what we wanted, and we've been here a while, and this isn't a good fit for our family, it's okay to grow. You know, addition by subtraction can be a really good tool at times. Okay, hopefully that's the exception and not the rule, but it's been a really great tool at our school. When people say, this isn't really what we're wanting, and we say, yeah, we know, and we wish you the best moving forward. Another problem, selling something that is better, right? We think that CCE is better than the alternative, but you can't make it sound too much better because you're going to sound arrogant and you're going to offend everybody else, right? So you have something amazing, but I mean, it's not too amazing because it's totally up to you what you want to do, right? You have to figure that those fine lines out. And then, of course, trying to educate your community on this thing. What's your entry point? So difficult. There's a good marketing talk earlier, and he discussed digital marketing. And I would recommend that one to you as well. So these are not solutions. Again, this is really just encouragement. But remember the long obedience, okay? Maybe you're the only one in your area who's read Doug Wilson. That's okay. It's a long obedience. Just know that. Like I said, get really comfortable with it. And remember that reformations are slow. Revolutions are fast, but they are so destructive. Reformations are slow, and this is reformation-type work. Trust that the Lord is working in the area. This one's so important. Trust that the Lord is working in the area of restoring CCE outside of your immediate sphere of influence. Okay? When I came to Highland Rim, my husband and I was in education in school at UTK, University of Tennessee, and would come home ranting and raving about progressive ideology, and they're so contradictory, and they don't really have good answers for these questions. And my husband said, you know, you need to stick with the English degree stuff. You're going to be fired if you go try to teach in a school, because you're just not fitting. And I was like, no, I really want to teach, but also everything they're saying is wrong. And so we just started this journey of looking at, you know, what else. We knew there was another way. And we landed on classical Christian education, and though homeschooling could be such a good option, we really wanted a private school, and we didn't have kids of our own yet. And we said, man, do we have to start one? We really don't want to do that. And I started sharing these ideas with a friend of mine, and she said, you know, there's a guy at my church, and he's saying a lot of the same stuff, and I think there's a website, and you should go check it out. And sure enough, for the past couple years before, you know, at the same time, I guess, as we were coming to this conclusion as a family, the Lord is already putting together a board and a founder, and then he just hired me, and we just came to work together. But you know what? As he was working on that stuff, the Lord called us to it separately. And we've had so many parents come to us and say, we've read these books, we wanted this thing, we didn't even know you were here, and we found you, we're so excited. And sometimes I'm guilty of thinking, but how did you know? I didn't even tell you, you know? And so trust that the Lord is restoring classical Christian education outside of your immediate sphere of influence. It's okay to enroll families who don't know a lick about this stuff. It really is. Look for the broader aspects of like-mindedness. For us and our family interviews, like-mindedness and faith in academics, right? What's the goal of education? And then also behavioral standards. What does that look like to be respectful and to be a member of this school community? We look for those broader aspects of like-mindedness. Most of our families have never heard of classical education, or at least like just recently, you know, when they went on our website. And be hopeful that you can bring those families along. Some won't come along, and that's okay, because most of them really will. All right, fifth lesson. distinguishing between having a vision and knowing what to do about it. Man, this one's huge. This distinction is so necessary because seeing the vision clearly is not the same as knowing the specific steps to take to go about bringing it to fruition. I know it seems like they should go hand in hand. They're just not the exact same thing, complementary, but not the same thing. Do not assume that one is the other. So here's an example, and this one hurts a little bit. Say, I know it's Socratic teaching. I know that it's the hallmark of classical pedagogy in certain grades and subjects specifically, but do I know how to train my teachers to practice that? And, you know, we went to ACCS conferences, really good start, not enough. Read Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning, not enough. And I know this because we tried, because we received ACCS accreditation this past fall, which we're really excited about. But a few years before that, we didn't. We had them come in, and they said no, because we didn't really know what we were doing as it concerned our pedagogy. We knew that we should be teaching Socratically, but we didn't know how to get there. We didn't know that we didn't know. Does that make sense? And so so knowing what, you know, seeing the vision and then knowing exactly how to get there, and I'm really proud of the fact that I think we're there now. At least we're definitely getting there. But they're not necessarily the same thing. And tomorrow I'm giving a talk about formative evaluations with teachers, and I can talk a whole lot more about how do you get what you want out of your faculty. So again, distinguishing between having a vision and knowing what to do about it, find people who are gifted at doing one or the other, or both, but ensure that both are present in your administration. And I realize I'm talking to board and admin all here. Who do you know who can see the invisible and then get other people to see it too? And by the way, do you know what you call those people who see things that are invisible, but they can also convince other people to see them too? They're crazy. They are crazy. It's true. Who do you know who can bring other people along with the big vision stuff? But who do you know who can nail deadlines and create spreadsheets and action plans and then actually bring them to life? And a nice little Parks and Rec reference. You need a Leslie Knope is what you need. You need somebody who can put notebooks together and who can create action plans and then really implement them, bring flesh to the vision. Not just be busy, but really bring something alive. Constantly ask yourself, yes, but how do we know? How do we know that we're doing that? So I want you to imagine the pitch that you give to a prospective parent. They come in, you give a tour, and you say, we're different here, here, and here. And we do this, and we do that. And then I want you to imagine that on every single point, they said, okay, but how? It'd be really annoying. It would take all day. But walk yourself through that. And if you can't answer those questions, then maybe you think you're doing something and you're not really. Lesson number 6, distinguishing between founding and operating a school. This one's really closely related to the previous point. All right, if you are a head of school, would you raise your hand? Great, I just want to know who I was about to offend. Actually, if you're head of school and you founded your school. Yeah, those are the ones I'm about to offend. I hope not. So, while successful heads of schools need to be able to be able to both follow and administrate policy, visionaries, and you guys are visionaries, okay? Visionaries often need to be the type who break the rules, right? You really do, and I'm really thankful for that because right now the rules say send your kids to public school. That's the status quo, and we need people who want to throw that out. But the Bronco can't always just buck. He or she eventually needs to lead in really practical, ordinary, rule-following ways. I don't want to create a false dichotomy at all, but I also want to ask you to consider that assumption that a great founder is necessarily someone who can operate a school really well. They can absolutely be the same person, but not always. Don't assume that. And here are some things to consider in that vein. Maybe it's just a matter of timeliness. Maybe after a time, a founder needs to move into a different position. If they're fantastic at vision casting, go tell them to go work in development. Maybe they're best as an upper school principal, or maybe they're really good at the business side of things and they can do the business. Maybe they're great at curriculum instruction. So maybe it's just a matter of timing and when that person needs to move. Maybe it's a matter of assembling the right kind of complementary support staff or administrative team, right? Or maybe it's just a matter of providing appropriate training for them. If they founded a school, they did what it took to get this really amazing thing up and running, but they have some other weaknesses, and they need a board who will come in and support them and give them some training. Lesson 7, reaping and sowing. Galatians 6:7 says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever one sows, that he will also reap." You can slide on a lot when you're small, right? Small budget, small staff, small student body. But remember that you will not reap later what you have not sown now. You are creating a culture, even as a small or a young school, a culture of practices. And in 10 or 20 years, you're going to reap whatever you're sowing today. So reap well. Reap well. Lesson 8, top-down accountability. I would file this under things that we would definitely do differently. You must provide accountability for every person in your school. Every person in your school. And this is more important the higher the influence is and the greater the responsibility. And we lacked this appropriate accountability for the first 7 years in our school. There was no accountability for anybody except faculty. And then during our 8th year, we developed an accountability structure from the top down, and that ended up resulting pretty quickly in a sudden loss of our founding headmaster abruptly in the middle of school year. It was really, really costly to a lot of people, and it could have been really, really destructive. But God was faithful, and we survived and even quickly thrived, I think. But sometimes it seemed like we only just barely made it. Okay. Boards, I know that you love your school heads, and I know that you trust them, and you should. Both of those things should be happening. But protect them. It's not in spite of your love and your trust, but because of your love for them. Support them, protect them, serve them in this way, and make sure that you have appropriate accountability measures set up. Heads of school, same thing for the rest of your administrative staff and your teachers. Serve them. Accountability is a way to love. If you've parented, you would know that. Lesson 9. The day or weeks or months or years, depending of small beginnings. In the book of Zechariah, we hear about Zerubbabel, who would lead the first wave of Israelites from exile to rebuild the temple. And in chapter 4, verses 8 through 10, we read, "Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, 'The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house. His hands shall also complete it. Then you will know that the Lord of hosts has sent me to you, for whoever has despised the day of small things shall rejoice and shall see the plumb line in the hand of Zerubbabel.'" So not everyone here today, I understand, is in the day of small beginnings, but many of you are. Don't despise that, okay? Lean into it. Some of the things that you see now as burdens, you will miss and you will long for in future days. You really will. Our first several graduating classes, I would look at these students and I thought, I taught you when you were in fourth grade. And because we were super small, I taught them in fifth grade. And then, you know, I taught them in the sixth grade and in the seventh grade. And I mean, they had me forever. Talk about discipleship. Man, it's so beautiful. And relationship, too. Those kids were close to faculty in a way that graduating classes, even this was our fourth graduating class, even now, we don't, you know, yay, we've grown, and I'm not having to teach all the classes, and we have departments and things like that, but we don't have the students the way that we did. And I miss that. And so lean into those things. Lesson 10, how to give students something that we don't have. Well, God help us, right? We had this amazing angel of a woman named Holly, and she was our administrative assistant for the first 10 years, and then she had a bunch of grandbabies and wanted to go look after them. And we used to joke that she was the only one who had been classically educated on staff. It was a funny thing, right? The Lord made her the secretary. And that was okay, and that was good for us. At an ACCS conference in either 09 or 11, I heard Doug Wilson. It was a plenary talk, and he made this statement, and I was so, it irked me. but now it's one of the things I cling to the most. He said, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing. No, he said, it's worth doing poorly. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly. And I'm like, Doug, that's not the way it goes. Is it worth teaching Latin to students and recovering that if you're only staying a week or two ahead on the lessons because nobody in your town knows Latin? It really is. It's poor. I get it. I've been a really poor teacher, but it was worth doing. It was worth doing. And thankfully, we're not there anymore, right? We don't want to stay there, but it's okay to be there for a time. Also, God created ex nihilo, right? Out of nothing. And we serve a God who has a vast amount of experience in the field of making something where nothing once was. So have faith, friends. Have faith. And lastly, your school is not for your children. Raise your hand if you have kids in your school or have had. Okay, it is. I know you think it's for your children. It's not for your children. When I began to teach at Highland Rim, we didn't have kids, but I was there because we hoped that the Lord would grant us children, and this is what we wanted for them. And I'm really thankful that my perspective has changed because now I'm working for the hope of good for my great-grandchildren. And they might not be at Highland Rim, but they'll be at Jonathan Edwards Classical over in Nashville. They might be at Rockbridge or Trinity or Providence. Just pick one, any Trinity or any Providence. There's plenty to choose from. My hope is that I'm laying a foundation for the restoration of this thing that we nearly lost, right? It's not for my kids anymore. It's for my great-great-grandkids. So in closing, one of the best books I've read about raising small children is by Rachel Yankovic. I hope I'm pronouncing all places to mispronounce Doug Wilson's daughter's name. Rachel Yankovic wrote Loving the Little Years. And she said in that book that your struggles will be regular, they will not cease with raising small children, but the struggles will change. And so remember, when you're really frustrated with this thing that you're struggling with, it's not the same struggle that you had 6 months ago or a year ago, maybe with the kids, right? My kids aren't always going to spill their milk at every single meal. I mean, we have tried all the sippy cups. It ends up on the floor. The same thing for educators. I said at the start of this talk that we need two voices speaking into our lives and into our work. The voice from the mountaintop, and then that voice just a few steps ahead of us cutting the brush. And as we have rounded the corner of our 10th and now 11th year, I've learned that there's a third voice as well. And some of you are thinking, the voice of the Lord. And I am so thankful that you are godly and that you are thinking that. That is not what I have. Although it is true. That third voice is the voice of those schools who are behind us, right? The younger, smaller schools. They will give us perspective. We'll visit them. We'll talk to those teachers and those administrators, and we'll say, gosh, I remember that struggle. I forgot. I forgot that we weren't there anymore. Or, wow, that's really sweet that you guys know your students so intimately. We don't have that quite as much anymore. We need that third voice. Help us to grow in gratitude. Like I said, school visits is an important part of what we do to be well-informed and to train ourselves. And I used to go to these schools and I would be amazed. I would say, first graders are reading Charlotte's Web, and those fourth graders are reciting The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. And I can't believe that they're being so well catechized. And my mind was blown. And now when I go to schools, I mean, really great, great schools, accredited schools, fantastic schools, I go, great teacher. That was a really good school. I'm really glad I went that day. That's really encouraging to me. But you know what? I see all that stuff at Highland Rim every day. And my normal is different. I have a new normal. It's still encouraging. I still love seeing those schools. But I'm not as amazed anymore because that's what we do too. That's been a real encouragement. So I'm going to end this talk with the way that every good ACCS talk should end, with a C.S. Lewis quote. He writes here in his letters to Malcolm, "The dullest of us knows how memory can transfigure, how often some momentary glimpse of beauty in boyhood is a whisper which memory will warehouse as a shout. Why should what we see at the moment be more real than what we see from 10 years' distance? It is indeed an illusion to believe that the blue hills on the horizon would still look blue if you went to them. But the fact that they are blue 5 miles away and the fact that they are green when you are on them are equally good facts. So my hope is that we will all continue to learn to see clearly what is at the moment very real, as well as see clearly what is still 10 years distant. And may God help us to see clearly in both respects. So I think with 11 seconds to spare, according to my timer, that I've hit all the ACCS conference talk checkpoints: Virgil, Tolkien, Lewis, scripture, Assassin's Creed was like my pop culture, box checked. And then not just one, but two of Doug Wilson's kids' books I plugged, right? So I'm doing pretty good. But I am still missing one. And if you're thinking G.K. Chesterton, then come see me afterwards because I want to be your best friend. But it's not Chesterton. It's Homer, right? I was teasing a gentleman on our staff who has never been to this conference. I said, you know, they're going to check your copy of Homer at the door. So I had this realization the other day I wanted to share with you. You know the song Africa by Toto? Go ahead, get it, get the tune. Yeah, I bless the rains. I think it's about Odysseus. So go look it up. I don't know if Toto would tell you that, but I'm convinced that that song is about Odysseus. And go look it up, I promise. I think I'm onto something there. I was thinking about Odysseus and what he would say if he were here at this talk, and I think that he would say that it's really not the first 10 years that you should be worried about, but it's the second 10 years that can be really adventurous as well. And so with that, I hope all of you have a great adventurous year next year, whether it's your second year, whether it's your 30th year. I encourage you guys to keep plodding. Sam plodded on. And I thank you for your attention. Have a good evening.